Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast, where we dive into all things software automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakra. While I'm not podcasting, I write articles on nandan.info. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. In this episode, we are happy to welcome back Onti, the CEO of Robocorp. Robocorp, as you all know, is an open source automation stack. The team has been adding some impressive features and we chat about that. We also talk about the general trends in the automation market. Let's listen in. Hi, Onti. Welcome to the podcast again. Welcome back. It's been some time. So thanks for taking time to get back with us.
Thank you for having me, Nanda. It's good to talk to you again. It's been a while since we last connected.
Exactly. It's been almost an year. I was looking up today and it was August of 2020. So it's been a year since we spoke. So I think I've been seeing a lot of exciting developments on Robocorp. So as per you, what are some new exciting developments with Robocorp?
So kind of rewinding back a year is a long time for a startup, obviously. Right. You know, kind of on the company side, we've raised a Series A funding round, which was $21 million.
Right.
Getting some capital in the company, being able to expand, build more awesome stuff. That's good for us. And you know, on the customer front, we have been actually gaining a lot of traction with both kind of the smaller customers through our expanding partner network. So we have a partner program that we have been really doubling down on MSPs and system integrators. We have some really, really good partners out there who are serving mostly the SMB market, but also going up market as well. And lately we have been going direct to kind of the Fortune 500s out there, that category of customers, and actually, you know, landing some really good deals that we are going to be announcing later on as they progress. But so that's kind of on the business side of things. And then on the product side, we have been obviously building a lot of things on the control room, on the orchestration platform. We recently announced a feature called Work Data Management, which is actually a collection of features, basically how you manage data flow between bots and different steps inside bots, so you can do parallelization of tasks and so forth. Pretty advanced feature, but it's kind of the core building block inside the control room that we have been architecting for a long time and also going to continue building on. So really foundational stuff for us. On the developer tool side, obviously coming up with new connectors, new libraries every week, basically. So that's something that never gonna stop improving. We've doubled down on VS Code as a development environment, and then also started to talk about a new and upcoming low code environment, which is gonna be exciting to launch next year.
Okay, that's excellent. I mean, developments both on the business side, which is pretty exciting. You have investment, and great to see that on the open source side, you know, you have enough ammunition to go forward, add new features, which is great. And I think it's been happening in the RPA space for quite some time. It's good to see that happening in the open source space. So that's good to see. And really exciting features. I've been following some of them. So this work data management, how did that come about? Is that something like customers were looking for something where they wanted parallelization because of the high data load? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically something that we had in plans since the beginning. So when we started out building the control room as the orchestration platform, we wanted to do a cloud native platform that's going to be, you know, highly scalable, highly available, highly secure. And we thought about how are we going to build the queuing mechanisms for kind of basically work queues as you have on the first generation RPA orchestrators. But we kind of wanted to think about how we can improve on the concept. So we created work data management that basically passes along work items between steps and bots, and it effectively pushes out the work to the bots. So the bots are not there statically waiting Because as you know, our whole pricing and licensing model is consumption-based. So we don't have the concept of a traditional bot license. So our bots are never kind of there idly waiting and kind of running and doing nothing, but actually the control room pushes out the work to the bots. So it kind of turns it around. And yeah, I mean, it's been a big feat to architect the functionality on cloud scale. But now that we have it, we're going to continue building on top of it. So we're going to have a lot of analytics, for instance, reporting dashboards and things around those areas, building on top of the work data management then afterwards.
Okay, so I think a lot of your things are driven because you have a cloud control room, right? And you recently also announced an on-demand runtime environment, right? Where people can run containers from their own environment. So can you explain that and how that came about?
Yeah, so while the control room itself is cloud native, and we also often talk about Robocop being a cloud native company, that's mostly on the control room side and also on the pricing, licensing, kind of we want to modernize, do the whole, think about Snowflake, for instance, in the data world, how they price. We want to bring that to the RPA world. But the bots themselves, as we all know, they need to live in pretty much any environment imaginable. So they need to be able to run in a container in the cloud, but also in a box made out of wood underneath somebody's desk, if you put it like that. So for that, we have the workforce agent that performs actions for the bots, and those can reside inside private cloud, private networks, and so forth. And for the on-demand runtime environments, we oftentimes have larger customers specifically. They typically like the fact that they can spin up and spin down containers, containers to run the bots, but they have specific requirements of that. Those being inside their own network, so we basically can deploy a Kubernetes cluster there, mm-hmm. That they host and manage, and the bots reside inside that, but the control room then controls that and access the single pane of glass where you can see everything happening. So that's been a highly requested functionality, and then also kind of related to that, we also enabled on-demand virtual machines where the control room can spin up a virtual machine image and spin it down even inside your private cloud. So these are kind of on the advanced use case mm-hmm. side of things, but we talk about a lot about the concept of automation ops, and merging point or integration between DevOps practices and automation RPA practices. So we kind of want to enable sophisticated RPA users to go beyond what they have been using and operate with this automation ops mentality, where it's all works in a modern lean, modern and agile infrastructure.
Oh, okay. So is it like a continuous development and deployment?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the best practice, to use a Git repository for the bus code. Mm-hmm. That gets integrated directly into the control room. We have native integration with GitHub, but you can also use any other Git repo. And then, just push out code and that mm-hmm. gets updated automatically across the bots and gets pushed into the runtime environments and updated automatically. So.
And also, you just spoke about you can even spin up virtual environments directly from the control room. So you can actually develop the bots and then even deploy the bots, including developing the virtual environment, including deploying the virtual environment directly. Is that?
Yeah. So the control room can act as a sort of a wake up mechanism for the virtual environments that you have there running for those bots. Typically that's used if you have a Windows workload that you need to run. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people have been really, really leveraging the container-based runtime environment. So for us, it was even a surprise how much people started early on using the containers. We thought that it was a cool and neat trick. but that was something that people really took on and started using, because because they're so easy to use in many ways. You don't have to think about infrastructure. You don't have to babysit a farm of virtual machines somewhere. You just spin it up and spin it down. It's really cost effective as well. So kind of funny thing, as we have been doing replacements of Gen 1 RPA tools on the field, we have actually seen that we go in there and talk about all the savings on the licensing, because it's consumption based. So you're not paying for overhead that you're not using. That's good. Everyone likes it. But then we realized that, oh, actually people end up saving on the infrastructure oftentimes more than the licensing.
Exactly. Yeah, and I remember when we used to do RP, and this was probably 5 years back, but you know, at Fujitsu, we used to actually request a server, wait for some time, and then we would deploy it. And you know, we were using Blue Prism, and you know, each of them needed one server, and you know, it was an activity in itself, you know. In many of the customers' place, to getting an environment was the first step, and that used to take a long time. So this is great to see this development, that you can just you know, control everything from a control room, and you know, having infrastructure as a code, we can even automate that part, right?
And yeah, exactly. That's the way it should be, and that's all about the automation ops way of working. But you know, talking about those servers that people are deploying, like, there are also things that we can do to improve the utilization of those if you need to deploy them. So what we've done, for instance, is enable multiple bus to run on the same server at the same time. So if you have that kind of server capacity that you have to use because of your infrastructure set up in a specific way, you can actually, like, you know, have multiple bots running on the same server on just different accounts at the same time to try to squeeze a bit of efficiency out of it.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of this also is helpful because you guys are focused on code, right? I mean, that opens up possibilities, and you're doubling down on the VS Code, as you said. So that's also a great development, right? You are standardizing on a kind of an open standards platform. How is your customers receiving that?
So we have been observing a lot of the customer behavior between the lab environment that we had based on Jupyter notebooks and then VS Code. And what we actually noticed was that many people come in and use the lab because it's kind of a batteries included all in one installation, but they kind of graduated always to VS Code. And we saw people graduating to VS Code eventually. And so we started investing more into the developer experience around the VS Code extension that we have. So if you want to use Robocop or in VS Code, you just go to the marketplace and install Robocop Code, which is our extension. And then there's Robot Framework Language Server, so which gives you like syntax highlighting and stuff like that. And you just install those and you're good to go. So we started investing much more into the developer experience around those, and that has been going really well for us. You know, there are subtle things that we do there that people might not even realize, but it removes a lot of friction for them. So, for instance, when you start typing a keyword, which is a action for the bot, it automatically shows you a list of keywords there that, that you can select and from the RPA framework. And even though you haven't installed anything or you know, included any library or anything like that, just start typing, you see a list of keywords, you pick the one you like, and in the background, that library gets installed, that gets included into your project. You don't actually have to do anything. We like to do things like that actually like delight the developer when they are working, try to take the hassle away from managing it.
Yeah, and I like, you know, you're following the customers. The 2-3 things you said were following the customer, and also you're following the developers and making their experience better. Developers, you know, have been probably, you know, the idea was always to have citizen developer, and but all along it's been developers who have been doing it, and it's good to see that focus on the developers. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, our focus from the beginning was on this automation developer who does this, as a primary task, not somebody who works in accounting and maybe, does RPA once every month or week. So we started focusing on that persona. But at the same time, we've seen people who want to come into Robocorp, maybe from a background at UiPath or automation anywhere. We kind of seen people kind of get interested, largely because of our certification trainings. Those have been really, really popular among people. But if you don't have any exposure to scripting, you just have been working with RPA tools, it might be a steep hill to climb initially. So we came back on the citizen developer thing a bit. Early last year, I think the decision was made that we'll start building this low code environment called Automation Studio. We haven't shown it yet, but it's going to be really cool when we publish it early next year. But even though it's a drag and drop tool where you can build bots and experiment with them and just get started easily, there we have a toggle where you can actually switch between the code and the low code and back and forth. So we don't want to lock people into a proprietary low code tool that at the end might actually get in your way. You build something, gets more complex. You want to maybe work together with somebody on the same piece and so forth. So we came up with this concept where we can actually move seamlessly between low code and code. So you can have the citizen developer now in your team working together with the automation professional who may be using VS Code and the other is using Automation Studio and reusing components and sharing code and so forth.
Yeah, that sounds great. And so I wanted to talk to you about this whole citizen development a bit, right? I mean, because you're seeing it from the code, you're seeing that there is some value in citizen development. And I like what you're doing in terms of a studio that's extensible. And so in terms of that, it looks like these people, the personas who are, let's say, like you said, the people in finance and HR, they can do some of those things, but they are mostly very high level, right? They wouldn't want to go into, let's say, VS Code or even little code, because that's how everything is. Even you take UiPath or automation anywhere, if you need to finagle with something, you just need to go lower into the code, and that's a bit difficult. So do you see these personas using some components that the VS Code developers have developed and drag drop, and maybe the VS Code developers over a period will build a library of more drop and drag and drops, and then the citizen developers can use, and both of them can work in harmony?
Yeah, I think that can actually work out and happen. So think about the citizen developer persona. If that person develops a bot that actually goes into production, typically that goes through checks and
correct,
it's not as is, and somebody also needs to maintain that code.
Exactly.
So you're not gonna drop the maintenance burden on somebody who built it, and so there's typically process around that. So I think that kind of balance where we can enable people to easily build stuff and experiment, but then also have powerful tool set for the professionals, is the right balance. And that's really that we are searching for that right balance.
Mm-hmm.
You can do things like have your core automation team develop keywords that are high level, and you can combine them like functions in Excel, basically.
Yeah.
To instruct the bot to do things that are very specific to your business domain. They might handle your internal applications, things like that. So they are kind of inside your company, your organization, crafted by the automation team, but then your even low code citizen developers can combine those functionalities to make something or try out something. So I think there's definitely something there, and at least based on how much we see larger organizations, you know, wanting to push for that model, because they might actually lack the, you know, access to enough talented developers, these automation developers. That's kind of the biggest thing holding back the industry. There will be so much things to automate out there, so much customer demand as well, but the lack of like highly skilled automation developers, this goes across every tool out there basically.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a problem that can solve as, you know, as things are abstracted, and it's abstracting more and more. So, you know, yeah, I think citizen development is more of expanding that pool. I think like there will be a, you know, technical financial people or technical HR people who will take interest in that. You know, not all HR people or not all finance or not all supply chain people need to get interested in technology, but some people can, and they can bridge that gap.
And you know, thinking about me as a CEO, who oftentimes doesn't have too much time to you know, code things. I used to be a software engineer full time. I kind of know what I'm doing, but when I jump into a tool and it's been a month since I touched it, like I might be a bit rusty. I might not know all the syntax by heart and have all the muscle memory. So a tool like Automation Studio that we're building allows even me to come in after like months of break, you know, put keywords together and don't have to think about it too much. And so we want to create a tool that's like so good that even a sort of a seasoned professional likes using it. So it can be a sort of it can augment your kind of, you know, output in a way if it's run right. But then you have the toggle, you know, code to code, and right. You have full control over everything.
Right. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you about the automation space itself, right? It's been expanding quite a bit, as you must have seen. I mean, it's really great that the whole excitement that RP has created is creating a whole ecosystem around it. A lot of tools coming up in the space. We have people who are coming up with design tools, which is specific for RPA. People who are coming up with operational tools, people are coming up with just tools which will stitch together this whole thing, including process intelligence, which is another thing which is coming up in a big way. So while it's great with a lot of technology options, a lot of things are merging, and then, you know, things are blurring. It's a bit confusing out there, right? So how are you seeing it with your customers? And you know, how can people make sense of this and make a best of breed environment for themselves?
Yeah, I think best of breed is something that a lot of folks are looking for right now. The big vendors have been trying to push for a model where it's you know, all in the same platform, a hyper automation solution, as they would call it. But it's a lot of maybe my take on it might be that these are typically, you know, created through acquisitions. You kind of, you know, put together a lot of different products and might actually not end up being best of breed in anything outside of the core functionality of RPA. So we see, you know, large financial institutions, for instance, they want to kind of control their own destiny there. So I was actually a few weeks ago in a webinar inside Citibank, and I hope I'm allowed to say that, but there was Instabase and Robocorp, and then I think it was Scan AI, and we were talking about how we mix, you know, document understanding with process and task discovery and mining with RPA, and kind of find the best of breed approach among these, because right. You know, somebody like Instabase highly focused on document understanding and very good at it. We are highly focused on RPA. And very good at it, and we want to be integratable across the ecosystem. So right. Instead of wanting to, you know, I go out and buy a process discovery company. I don't know anything about that field myself. I haven't spent the last 10 years working in that. And so instead, we want to work with the best out there, and you know, be in the gradable. So I think that's at least our strategy. But you know, luckily that's something that the customers are also asking for. At least the kind of the ones who are getting more advanced out there. It's still fairly rare to kind of see a large organization who does everything among this kind of integrating, you know, whether it's process discovery to process intelligence, task mining, and you know, chatbots and what have you. Like it's it's rare that you see all this like at once, but that's certainly in the vision of many of these COEs and automation leaders. That's kind of the vision that they think about. And I think there's so much innovation happening right now in all of these segments that it would be a really surprising move if one company comes up and just has the best solution for every piece here.
Yeah, and it's going to be very difficult, you know, as we go forward, as technologies are increasing exponentially, and then it needs, you know, each person to be good at their niche, right? And so, it looks like that, but like you say, there are so many the bigger players, whether it is UiPath or Microsoft or Automation, they're looking to build their own platform, an end-to-end platform, which brings all these things together. So, you know, from a trend perspective, you know, looking forward, how do you see this evolving? You know, there are two approaches I see. One is this platform approach, the another is best of breed approach. And I think the platform approach mostly is tending towards going to cloud, like what Microsoft is doing. So what do you see as the future of this automation? I mean, it's a pretty complex, but if you had a crystal ball, what do you think, just at an overall level, where would we be in 3 years?
3 years is a long time. Again, like I said, that 1 year is long. 3 years is even more. So cloud, 100%. Like that's where everything is going. So
right.
Even though a lot of the RPA use cases are kind of focused on, like let's say, on-prem applications, I think we're gonna see as much cloud uses as possible, simply because it's so much less friction and so much better overall experience going with a cloud native approach than trying to manage that yourself. Right. So we 2 years ago, I think even 2 years ago, it was a different story talking with customers about a cloud native control room. Right now, there's customers that we have who I would have never guessed that they will go with the cloud approach. They actually, you know, create InfoSec review, you know, create procurement, like actively building on the cloud control room. It's you know, matter of having the right controls in place and right governance and compliance aspects, obviously. So that's going to continue as a trend. I don't see that going anywhere other than cloud. And then certainly in the sort of intelligence side of the automation, we're gonna see a ton of stuff happening, but it's not gonna be from the Microsofts of the world who are gonna be creating the most innovative solution. It's gonna be the Instabases of the world who are, like, you know, really focused on that. And you never know in 2 years' time who's gonna come up with the next new solution out there. I think it would be kind of foolish to bet on like one of the incumbents to come out with the most innovative solutions in the intelligence space. Right. So that's why I think, again, having that best of breed approach might make sense instead of betting on one horse. We've seen, you know, the leaders of yesterday become kind of the strugglers of today. So I think people are kind of want to retain some flexibility there. We see a lot of companies are doing dual vendor, even having multiple, like beyond two vendors in RPA right now, because they want to hedge against these kind of movements. Mm-hmm. And from our perspective, what we have been seeing, kind of an sort of early trend, has been that there's a lot of software vendors who are looking to integrate RPA-like capabilities into their own platforms and products.
Right.
So how I'm thinking about it is RPA will, to some degree, become embedded into different services and products in a way that the consumer of those products doesn't even know that it contains some RPA components. The same way as this was one executive of an analytics company told me this example was, you know, when you're looking at your cell phone waiting for the Uber car to come, you're looking at the estimation and to him it looks like you're consuming embedded analytics inside that application. It's very advanced analytics that it has, but the consumer is like, okay, I'm just watching the estimate of exactly. the arrival time. So it's going to be the same with RPA. You're going to be consuming a lot of RPA bots working with, you know, just interacting with your bank, for instance, from day to day, but you don't actually know about it. So it's going to normalize in a way.
Yeah, it's going to be normalized. I like that. And I think also a lot of this automation probably will start making, you know, like going into the background, like what you're saying, right? Like even the processes will go into the background. So if process is completely automated, nobody needs to worry about it. Yeah. Like
exactly. Like I kind of like them. It's not a band-aid solution. That's what we had. Like, you know, you remember. It's not like, you know, there's so much history in IT systems that has been built over decades.
Correct.
That it's like silly to even think that, okay, you're just going to replace it all with a new system down
exactly.
the road. So it might actually make a ton of sense to build a bot that handles the whole system. And as if you do it, you know, robust and resilient, reliable enough, the bot is going to be as good as any integration solution. So I think there's going to be a lot of mainframes out there like 20 years down the road. It's going to be used by bots. But it's kind of this layers of different IT
systems
building on top of each other. And if you look at, you know, think more complex systems like our financial infrastructure that we are seeing right now being, you know, people are trying to disrupt that with crypto and Web3 and all of that stuff. You know, that financial infrastructure has been building layers of manual processes on Excel spreadsheets, and your head would explode if you kind of would uncover what goes into underwriting a insurance or something.
Exactly.
So IT systems are kind of the same. I think RPA is a sort of a natural evolution in that regard.
Yeah. And I keep telling people, you know, if we had been replacing systems like we had, you know, we would never have had mainframes. You know, we had this debate about mainframes versus Java, and many people tried to move things to Java, but it never happened, since still, like you say, a lot of data is on mainframes. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, an ideal world, a techie would have like stop the business, let's build all the systems again and restart, right? But never happens. It's things are always moving.
Yeah, it never happens. And you kind of have to fix the plane while you're flying
exactly. Yeah,
I think RPA is definitely here to stay in many ways, but it's going to become more embedded and going into background in ways that you don't actually think about it too much even. I mean that's part of the evolution of the industry, and also, you know, what's happening, what we are doing through our partner ecosystem is you know, allowing RPA to go down market to SMBs, and we see a lot of really exciting use cases happening there in smaller, medium-sized companies, healthcare, for instance, and so forth. So there's going to be a whole ecosystem of people building automations and running them as a sort of, you know, business outcome as a service type of thing.
Okay.
for smaller companies out there. So that's what's just starting to happen right now, and the market is wide open, basically limited by the number of automation developers out there.
Yeah, and that's an exciting prospect. As we spoke about you know, people focused on technology, and there is probably people just focused on each functional area and building out systems for that, right? I see actually many SaaS companies who are like bringing in a lot of funding who are just focused on HR, doing automation for HR, building automation for finance. Even building, I saw some companies who do just document processing for certain forms in finance and just automate that particular form. So I think we'll see that best of breed there too.
Yeah, we've seen that as well. And, you know, there are companies like Olive, I think, I don't know them too well, but I think they're like basically started out as RPA, but then focus on healthcare specifically around that slice and growing like really well. So yeah, I mean, in a way, it's like I'm kind of jealous to those CEOs who can just focus on a thin slice. But we set out ourselves to build a open source RPA platform, so we need to stay true to that mission. But it's a lot of surface area obviously to cover, and then we have the system integrators who'll take Robocorp, who'll take, you know, a document understanding system, and who'll create a solution out of that, and then go after that slice in the market. So that's what's happening, and we are very keen to work with these people who are packaging us up into a solution and then going out and selling it.
Right, and like you say, I think as this space expands, and we did speak about this expanding space, I think the opportunities are expanding too, and where people can focus on and, you know, come up with opportunity, whether you're a system integrator or starting a new company, a SaaS company, there's a lot of opportunities out there. So that's been a great discussion, Auntie. So before we go, just can you tell people where they can find you or connect with you?
Yeah, so obviously good place to start is robocorp.com if you want to check it out. But then otherwise, I'm going to be on LinkedIn and Twitter. You can find me there. Antti Karjalan is kind of a hard name to spell, but maybe you'll have it in the show notes or in the info. You can put my bio there. So, you know, feel free to reach out. I always accept requests from like RPA practitioners. So feel free to just contact me on LinkedIn. If your profile says RPA, I'll accept immediately.
And then you can work together, right? So, yeah, and I've been trying to say the name Karjalan, and so that's an interesting name, an interesting thing.
Yeah, that was a good one. Went pretty well. I typically just go with Antti. That's much easier.
All right, Andy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Awesome. Thank you, Nandan. It was great.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. I appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you're there, feel free to explore more automation ideas, tutorials, tools, and more. See you next time.